It's April 8th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 5.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Steve Gaynor.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And it's April 8th.
And it's April 8th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 5.
Wow, sounds like a good
I'm
one.
I'm still Chris Remo, though.
Yeah. I don't know. You know who I am.
Oh, okay. And we went to PAX.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
Or at least Jake and I did.
Yeah.
Steve,
PAX East.
Steve decided that he hates both of us, so he didn't want to associate with
us. I think that's probably the best thing to blame me hating on for me not going to PAX.
Chris and I?
Yeah. I mean, at least they're kind of local targets. It's not like I hate our fans, video games, Boston.
Well, what you hate, you hate the Red Sox.
Are they from Boston?
Yeah. It's April 8th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 5. I am being judged right now by Steve Gaynor.
And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm judging Jake Rodkin.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And I'm Chris Remo still.
No. What? No. We got to stop at me. See, we did
you. Who are you?
I'm Jake Rodkin.
Ah. And we went to PAX. Jake and Chris went to PAX.
two of the three previously heard face...
Two or three previously heard face.
Yes. Oh God.
All right.
Talk
heard
good.
Face. Here, Goldblum.
Here goes starting face. Over again.
What? We don't need to do that.
Oh, we do. Set.
Yeah, that's true.
Awful people.
It's April 8th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 5.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Steve Gaynor.
And I'm Jake Rodkin. And we're here to talk to you about video and computer games.
And
expos.
And expos.
Hmm.
You might call this podcast an expose.
Hey, we went to the Penny Arcade Expo East.
All right, that's cool.
Jake
How
and
was
I
it?
Went to it.
Yeah, because I didn't go to it.
No, you didn't, Steve.
You would have hated it. They had video games and computer games.
Oh.
And people sort of talking about and playing them.
Did they have other stuff, too?
There were some board games.
Oh. Yeah, you're right. It's a good thing I didn't go.
Yeah, you hate all of those
all
things.
All those things are what Steve despises.
Yeah.
This podcast is self-flagellation for Steve.
It had people who made a Bioshock game there.
Wait, who? What?
So you'd hate them.
Yeah. Man. Yep. Well, I hope you guys had a good time.
I did. Knowing that I was indulging in things that Steve Gaynor hates makes me happy. So it was a pretty good weekend.
Just kind of to spite me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty much just, you know, we kept seeing cool thing after cool thing and being like, oh man, Steve would hate this shit. So I'm having fun.
I'm glad I could enhance your enjoyment of this special.
No, event. I don't know. PAX was cool. Chris and I, we both went to the thing, Seattle one, the real one.
Yeah. Whoa. Last year.
Yeah.
For the last couple
last
years,
few
guess,
years.
Yeah.
And you can tell that this is the first time that they did one in Boston because it seemed like a lot more people showed up than they were expecting to show up.
Oh, really?
I mean, there were more people there than at any of the Seattle ones.
Yeah.
And in a smaller venue.
I guess there are more big cities closer to Boston.
I think there are more
pent-up demand.
There's more East Coast dudes who have not had a dorky game convention to go to ever.
Yeah.
So you could tell that the show floor felt a little empty. Like, if you like... Antec cases and Patriot Memory, they were on the show floor. And that's sort of...
You meant there weren't enough exhibitors.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like...
I thought you meant empty of the people you were just saying there were
like, compared to the level that PAX West Coast has gotten to, which is almost...
Like all the major publishers.
Yeah, all the major publishers show up. But this show, the floor was open to some guys who probably usually wouldn't go to the space. But... It gave the impression that next year it'll be a pretty ridiculous thing.
And there were a number of indie guys on the show floor.
Yeah, that
was
a really cool thing, is that dudes could get a floor.
Yeah.
We actually played a fair amount of one of the games that was surprisingly good, I thought, was Joe Danger.
Joe Danger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I checked that out at GDC. I didn't actually play it, but it looked really nice.
Yeah.
And it looked like it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It looked like What was I thinking?
It's Excitebike and Little Big Planet, but also kind of Rad Racer a little ish.
Well, I mean, it's honestly like, the most direct comparison I think is Trials in terms of stuff that's available right now.
That is what I was thinking. It looks kind of like a cross between Excitebike and Trials HD.
Yeah, that's basically
The level creation stuff is straight up Little Big Planet, though.
Yeah, but in terms of the core mechanics of the game, I mean, that's
I guess core mechanics is totally Trials and Excitebike, but yeah.
And that's what.
But then
I mean,
can also build your own tracks and stuff like Little Big Planet.
It's very Little Big Planet where there you've just got the motorcycle guy and you press a button and it sort of like the camera pulls out one level and then you can suddenly start dropping blocks and cars and switch tracks in and it seems to have community infrastructure to like Little Big Planet.
It's really the
what platform is it for?
PS3 right now.
I think PS3 and PC. Or is it just PSN right now?
I think technically, I think it's one of those cases where they're developing it for a few systems and are officially...
It's just whatever licensing and releases they can work out, it'll come out for. Exactly. They confirmed PSN at PAX, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the level editing stuff is great. You can... I forget how exactly similar Little Big Planet is to this because I haven't done it in a while. But, you know, you can have your guy flying through the air and then pause it and put a ramp right under where you can see he's about to land and then press start and you're immediately like in real time back to where you were. So you can, I mean, it's an incredibly cool level of real time editing, no matter what situation you're in at any time.
The different stuff they were demoing in terms of, the different objectives that you can author into a level of, you know, I mean, it's all various, Tony Hawk or I guess kind of trialsy stuff of like collect a chain of stars or, collect the word danger or hit these targets or run a thing in a certain period of time. But the thing that I thought was nice was that you can have multiple objectives going on at the same time. That was the thing that I thought was really cool.
And one big difference to Trials, I mean, it's a side-scrolling game like Trials, but there are three levels of depth, like Little Big Planet, kind of.
Yeah.
And except more, they're kind of more discreetly obvious in this
game. They are
game
like
because
the three tracks
lanes
of an Excitebike track, but you can switch between them.
Yeah.
So the demo that the guy had was a level that they had authored where at the beginning, if you end up going left, you'll hit the first coin in the coin objective, and then you sort of end up racing through that track. But then you have to keep staying on the correct switches to collect the coin achievement. But then if you go back and play through the same level again,
you can go a different direction.
Yeah, there were just there
different
were
objectives.
I thought that was nice.
It is really cool.
It made me pleased.
Yep.
I also like racing a bike with physics
huh.
and going on a loop.
Huh.
I like all those things.
I mean,
they're all fun things.
Visually, it looked really nice. I mean, it had like this very bright.
It looks like a super pretty Excitebike, basically.
Yeah, yeah, but it has a really nice, just sort of welcoming aesthetic. Yep. I like the style.
It's pretty.
Who makes it or is making it?
Some dudes in the UK who quit jobs at bigger game industry things, I believe. Yeah.
Yes.
I forget what they're called, but it's a new team. You know, it's a small indie new dude team.
I guess I was wondering where they were from, and they're from the UK.
They're the United Kingdom.
And yeah, it seems like guys who came from AAA developers and decided, we'll make a thing.
Yeah.
And they made a motorcycle game.
They did that.
With motorcycles.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. I don't know what else we did.
I played Crackdown 2 when I was there, but
what happened?
It was fine. I don't know. They had the multiplayer mode on display, which is just not what I care about at all. I mean, the multiplayer co-op is fun, but they had like just straight up deathmatch, which was just, it was fine. I mean, you run around and you can climb up things and shoot at guys and jump around.
Sweet.
But it's, I mean, I don't know.
Not about exploration and stuff.
Yeah,
like
there's
what you'd be
like none
for.
Of the actual stuff I enjoyed about Crackdown really exists in a round-based deathmatch.
Yeah.
So
that sucks.
It was not my favorite way to experience that game, but I guess they wanted something that they could quickly get people in, have them do a, you know, timed or point-based thing and then get them out.
Yeah.
But
have you played it at all aside from that?
No, this is my only exposure to it, yeah.
I mean, how is the feel and stuff?
It felt fine. It felt basically like Crackdown.
Nice.
Surprisingly
Probably
similar,
good.
Considering the fact that it's a different team. And
it has a number of the same people, though, right?
Yeah, but it's a different studio, and it was kind of... It seems like there was a bit of acrimony between... Well, it's... like, Microsoft basically owns the license to it.
Yeah.
And wanted Real Time Worlds to do a sequel, and Real Time Worlds was like, oh, we can't do it right now. We're pretty much all hands on deck on APB, so, you know, we'll do it in a little bit. And Microsoft's like, nope, we need it now. We're going to set up this new studio, like, just next to you.
We're going to set up Crackdown 2 games.
They're going to do it. So the new studio is Ruffian Games, and it's got some people from Real Time Worlds and a bunch of new people who didn't come from Real Time Worlds. And it seems like it's a bit of a touchy subject, because I interviewed one of the guys from Ruffian, and he didn't seem to want to talk about that. I don't know. I don't think there's been a lot of contact between the two studios. So it's kind of an odd thing. I'm looking forward to playing it, but the stuff they allowed us to play was not
worthless.
It was just it was not what I
good work, Jake.
So much care about in Crackdown.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, were you playing that stuff in the same like city that the single player game will take place in?
Yeah, I think the way they do the multiplayer levels is they're just gated off sections of the city. I think is how
like with gates.
You know, with like big
force fields,
big invisible force field walls. Yeah.
Mm. Did the city seem like it was well built and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it was like just a big shipyard with a bunch of crates and stuff. So
oh, good.
Yeah.
It was, all right.
You know,
that sounds compelling.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. We had an Idle Thumbs get together.
We did that.
We can talk about that.
At the fucking fruits of that get together right now.
Yeah, there's a on this table where we're recording. There's a plush puffin, which is decked out in wizard garb.
Yeah,
amazingly,
this is true.
Yes,
he showed up.
This was given to us at the meet by one of the Idle Thumbs listeners who on the forum, if you are a forum member, goes by Soul Chicken. And he apparently saw, he was at a convenience store or something, I guess, and saw this stuffed puffin and also saw, like, Jake, did you understand what he was saying?
It sounded like he also saw a wizard outfit for the puffin nearby.
Was it intended for the puffin?
I don't know if it was intended for the puffin or other toy.
Yeah, they were purchased separately. The costume and the puffin were not... They were not bought as one unit.
Unfortunately, no one has yet manufactured an official wizard puffin.
Yeah.
Well, this one looks pretty official.
I know. It does look like the final product
is convincing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the meet was fun. I would say there were, I don't know, 40-something people in there total over the course of the evening. Yeah.
Enjoyably filled up half of some pub that wasn't quite expecting us to do that, even though we warned them ahead of time.
Because when I made the reservation, I was like, oh, you know, 15, 20 people, like, you know.
40 people.
Yeah.
It was good.
100,000 people.
I think actually towards the end of the night, they stopped letting people in because we had filled up the place.
Good.
Like people were, in fact, I think some people actually left so that other people could come in.
It was a thumbs takeover.
Yeah, we fucking took over.
Hostile takeover of some pub.
I don't remember what it was called. But it was fun. It was a good time.
Some pub.
The wizard's lair? I think that was what you guys said last time.
I think it was actually the puffin and the wizard.
The puffin and wizard, yeah.
The puffin and wizard, yeah.
The wizard and wand.
That's probably a thing from a thing that I don't know.
Whatever.
I'm not cool.
That wasn't a reference. I'm just bullshitting.
It sounds like you were referencing something.
Well, he wasn't. Owned.
So you guys loved PAX the most.
It was fun. It was a good time.
Cool. It's good. Maybe I'll go next year.
Maybe. Steve is shaking his head.
The readers couldn't hear it.
But they know. Now they know. Jake and I played a lot of Marble Madness, sadly.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you say the guy who made the music for Marble Madness hung out with you as well or something?
No.
What?
Mark Cerny, who created Marble Madness.
Oh, okay.
Like, created. Randomly. Well, okay, so Jake and I played a bunch of Marble Madness at
PAX.
Because
you had never played Marble Madness.
I had never played it before.
And then we became accidentally addicted to it over the
weekend. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you play it with the trackball and everything?
No, it was the NES version. We kept going.
Oh, okay.
We were looking for something to do because we wanted to go to some panel on game audio or something, and it was full.
Completely
full. And then the next room over was Retro Game Free Play, so
yeah.
We checked out Marble Madness because the guy's like, oh, we got Marble Madness. And then... And then I remember that game was really fucking
the guy
fun.
Was like,
we got Marble Madness.
Oh, we got Marble Madness.
Yeah, he said, we got Marble Madness. And then like smoke started billowing out in front of the table. And then we were in the marble world.
Nice.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
I should have gone to PAX.
Yeah. It was fucking crazy.
It's like when we went to California Extreme and you spent 80% of the time playing Clacks.
Yeah. That game was fucking
fun. It was actually very similar to that.
Ugh.
But except,
hey, fuck you, Steve. That's
you
what
can play
for.
That shit on a PSP.
I don't,
or a goddamn really? Whatever. Yeah, they've released that thing in a bunch of collections.
Well, I don't want
it was just
buy
hilarious.
It.
You paid $30 or $50 or whatever to go to that thing, and then you just played Clacks for like 6 hours.
Clacks.
Clacks.
You were playing games for 6 hours.
Yeah. All of them.
I played some of them.
Yeah, we might have flown to Boston to play a solid 3, 4, 5 hours of Marble Madness.
It wasn't fucking 5 hours because they kick you off.
You're right.
After
it was
45
okay.
minutes.
It was 2 hours.
Yeah, we probably played about an hour and a half, 2 hours of Marble Madness. Yeah.
Good work.
Over the course of 3 days, though.
So then you met the master of Marble Madness.
Yeah, well, because we were playing it and we were commenting. When we were at PAX, we were commenting how cool the music was, and I got really interested in it and found some of it on YouTube later. And then I was like back in my office the day after coming back, and Mark Cerny, who I recognized by sight as the guy who created Marble Madness, like just showed up in our office for some random reason. He had a meeting or something.
And you're like, oh man, I just played Marble Madness.
And I was wondering, well, yeah. And so I talked. He's a super, super nice guy. And we talked for a while, and he was saying that there was two guys who did the music, and it actually took them 6 months to make the music just for the first two tracks because they had to figure out how to do it on the
whatever
like,
that
weird hardware,
hardware, yeah. But it's really good music.
The music of the first two levels, yeah, especially, two is like the most badass stuff. Yeah. I love that stuff. Yeah,
I can't place it, but I will listen to it if you remind me.
Yeah, you'd be pleased.
The second level is like boo doo 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 doo. Pretty good.
That's also the music from Sonic the Hedgehog, one of those.
But it's a fun game, and Mark Cerny's
some sort
cool.
of marble zone, actually. Weird. Anyway,
yes. So PAX was fun.
Oh, the other thing I'm going to say one more thing about PAX.
Do it.
We played a little bit in the PC free play area as well.
TF2.
I don't want to talk about TF2, but at previous PAXs, there have been enough things on the floor that I. You know, or just events going on that I never bothered to go over to the gaming free play areas. Right. But going to that PC free play was probably the first time that I've been in a LAN environment in a billion years.
Yeah.
LANs are fucking fun.
It's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. They are. That's all. A reminder to me that LANs are good. Fact.
That was fun. It was a good time.
I think that's all that I had to say about that.
We've done a little bit of LAN gaming at the office. We played an Irrational Classic SWAT 4 LAN style.
Yeah.
That shit's fun. because it's all about like teamwork, and it's really kind of, I don't know, simmy and a little bit clunky and stuff. So, you know, you can get into those sort of classic situations of a encounter spiraling out of control and you all just go crazy and start spraying bullets everywhere.
Right.
And doing that like where you can hear in the same room is the best.
Yep. Yes, that is the best.
The thing that was weird about the PAX one though is that it was the first time that I'd been at a LAN in a long time where I didn't know everyone. I've played TF at work, but this was the first time in a while where
LAN party.
Yeah, you say some stupid shit out loud, and then you look over and two computers away is the guy that you just blew away who you don't really know.
Yeah,
it's really enjoyable.
Well, you don't know at all.
Well, you don't know at all, but I mean. At PAX, it was, I think, the last time. Oh, maybe you weren't there. Maybe it was just Doug and I. We were playing, and TF2 had calmed down because they started transitioning the PC free play over to other areas. So there were just basically a few rows in the back of people who had been playing that game. So, but none of us realized it till about halfway through the match. Then we all sort of started looking around. And
there's no one else there.
No, just everyone who was yelling all the stupid bullshit into microphones that you always yell when you play over the internet. I was like, wait. And then someone just said, who's playing on the server? Please put up your hands. And it was just like, brrr, like, oh, okay. We can all see each other.
Yeah. No, that is a weird thing.
It was weird. It was good.
Yeah. I haven't had
y'all just kind of got creeped out and just stood up slowly and left.
Or you just finished the entire rest of the game, not saying a single word in silence, hunched over your screen.
Yep. Yeah. It was good. Games.
Them.
Those games.
Yeah. That's them games I've heard so much about.
Okay.
The video game.
Stop.
Silence.
One video game that came out this week that I have...
You played one?
Put a couple hours into so far. Not tons of time, but is Plain Sight, which is a multiplayer PC game based on little robots with swords that jump around and blow themselves up.
In space.
In space. With... And this is the best part for me, relative gravity. So, you know, it's got that Mario Galaxy style thing where you can jump around from like body to body, you know, like structure to structure.
Weird orbs and
things. In and out
crazy
of gravity.
Crazy abstract
and orbit
spaces.
And
I mean, crazy abstract constructions floating in space.
But unlike Mario Galaxy, you can't fucking fall off and die. So
yeah, no, it's true. You can never die by that.
Hovering around weird things and then
there's some levels of Mario Galaxy where you can't fall off, right?
That's true, but the worst parts of Mario Galaxy are the parts where there's stupid
where you can break
arbitrary platforming
and
deaths.
Then just
die
for no reason. Yeah.
Yep.
That sucks. This game does not feature that, which is nice. And you can start doing really cool stuff where you like the way the game works is you kill your enemy by hitting them with a sword in close combat, and you do that by locking onto them and then boosting towards them. And so you can get...
Sounds like it's right up your alley.
It is. It's right up my alley. Boosting and jumping. So...
boost.
You can start doing cool things with the combination of the jumping and the locking on.
So you're a robot.
You are a robot where you can jump around and lock onto people and use that as momentum to fly through the air in a much longer distances than you can just by jumping. It's really awesome and fun.
Sweet.
And it was a couple of the people who worked on it are our UK Thumbs, Idle Thumbs crew members.
So that's by cool. playing this game, you're supporting some Idle Thumbs people, maybe.
Yeah. I think that makes it a good purchasing
Also, your
decision.
Robots flying around in space sorting each other. So
on top of a Red Hot Chili Peppers tape.
Yeah, for some reason, one of the levels is set on, like, one of the CTF levels is set on, like, two cassette tapes.
Are they both Red Hot Chili Peppers? Oh, it's probably because it's the red team bass. It's probably why it says Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what the blue
one
says.
The other one probably says Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah, that'll be my guess. All right. That makes some amount of sense.
Riddle
anyway.
Solved.
Oh, man.
But yeah, they're two cassette tapes floating in space with, so, like, the ribbon coming
pretty,
out of them, and
pretty,
you can jump around.
It's a pretty indie
it.
Game, like small studio, but most of the budget went into licensing those band names and putting them on those cassettes. Yep.
They needed that high profile.
Yeah.
The brand association. But yeah, I was watching you play, Chris, and it looked really nice graphically. I mean, I liked
it's very clean.
You like robots?
Well, it's one of those games. There's a few of them. Like there's that one freaking Quake 2 mod I can't think of, but it's another kind of thing where you jump around and leave a trail behind yourself. That I can't remember.
Tron.
You wish. No, but anyway, you're flying through space and you have all of this like air control. And it leaves a trail behind yourself. So when you're just observing the world, you see all these kind of interwoven, you know, abstract lines that are floating in the air. And it's really neat looking.
I like that in plain sight, all that stuff is aesthetically cool. But it's less noticeable in CTF. But when it's sort of free-for-all deathmatch, the point of that stuff is so you can find other players. Because in third person, you know, the little robots disappear. But
That's actually super useful in CTF, because when someone steals your flag...
Oh, does their color change?
What happens is you can see their... like, if blue team steals red flag, you see the solid blue trail from the blue player, and then a sparkly red trail from the red flag.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's actually really necessary.
Yeah, I like that stuff in the deathmatch as well, because the more people you've killed, the more power you... or the more valuable you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you cash out by killing yourself. So... you see the lame guys have the sort of the cooler colors, and the more powerful guys have the more bright, hot, burning ones. So if you see a trail somewhere on a level that is intense, you can follow it and find a dude and murder him.
A large dude, yeah, because you grow physically also as you...
Really?
Did you play the dinosaur mode?
No, I didn't.
There's some mode where one guy's a giant dinosaur and everyone else are small.
I've seen screenshots
regular
of that.
Ones.
Yeah.
So that's good.
It's a fun game.
It's a dinosaur
and
a robot.
It's on Steam and Impulse and all the other download services, basically. Although it has, I think it actually has Steam integration.
Yeah, it has
so the achievements
Steam
and everything
stuff.
Are all Steam based.
Yeah, it seems like if you are into just sort of like outright pure movement mechanics, it's very
If you like
exciting.
Jumping around and robots,
if you're me,
well, but I mean, there's jumping around and then there's like this. Crazy abstract
it has the
flying
sort of like soaring
floating,
stuff
you know spinning all this crazy stuff.
I mean it's got all the cool stuff you can
like
do where you
it's got
land.
All the cool stuff you can do
well all the stuff that comes along with relative gravity and at its best like just missed the ground deliberately so that you swing around to the other side
right, so you get the acceleration
and get the slingshot exactly there's all I mean it's one of those things where that basic mechanic opens up a lot of secondary movement mechanics that flow out of it and I love stuff like that
cool so.
It's cool.
It's the plainest sight.
It is the plainest of all sights. Games.
Are we done talking for right now?
Yeah, we can take a break.
Okay. Video game. The list of games discussed is Joe Danger, Crackdown 2, Marple Madness, Clax, SWAT Force, and Plain Sight. So,
SWAT 4, not SWAT 4.
4, sorry, I don't know games. SWAT 4, the number 4?
Yep. Yeah.
Are there 1, 2, and 3 as well?
Yes.
Are they all bi-irrational?
No, just 4.
They just made that one?
It's Police Quest SWAT.
I think it was Police Quest SWAT 1 and 2, and then just straight up SWAT
3. SWAT 3, and then SWAT 4.
Crazy. That's funny that it started off as a Police Quest game.
Yeah, it started off as like the tactical spin-off of an adventure game series.
Crazy.
Well, not quite.
Yeah, Police Quest SWAT 1 was an FMV game.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
And then SWAT 2 was isometric.
SWAT 3D.
But yeah, it's SWAT.
Yeah, it's SWAT 4.
SWAT 4000.
Not SWAT Force.
I don't know, games. I thought it was a force.
Yeah.
It was a police force.
No, it's a police quest.
It's a police quest SWAT Force 4.
Yes, exactly. Because it's like Modern Warfare. It's Police Modern Quest Force. SWAT
Modern
Force
War Force 4.
Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy 2, Jedis.
Four Force.
Four SWATs.
Team SWAT.
Ford Force.
Star
it's
Wars.
Sponsored by Ford.
By Ford. It's Ford. You ride around
SWAT
in a Taurus.
SWAT Ford Force.
SWAT Ford four? Force 4.
Oh, man.
Taurus LE.
How you guys doing?
Doing okay.
It's good.
I was just playing some SWAT Ford Force 4 the other day.
Oh, yeah?
You know, yeah.
How was it? Did it have good Ford physics on
the Ford
pickup
physics
truck?
Are pretty good, yeah. They've got...
It's the forward Ford
forces,
physics.
Yeah, exactly. The forward force applied to the Ford.
Oh,
pretty good.
The Ford physics forces.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Ford physics forward force.
They've got four forces acting on, you know, because it's four wheels, so...
Yeah.
Four Ford forward physics forces are operating simultaneously.
What?
Horrible.
It's just for fun.
Yeah, I know.
It is a fun game, yeah.
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 All those forces.
Well, the four of them.
Four of them,
four
yeah.
Discrete forces.
Yeah, Ford forces.
All right.
Operating on your Ford.
Focus.
What else you guys been doing or playing this week?
Oh, or you know, video
the last
games.
2 weeks. Lots of weeks.
More StarCraft 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I picked...
Steve's gonna head this one off.
Yep,
the pass.
Kill it. I picked Grand Theft Auto 4 Lost and Damned back up.
Did you beat it?
I had already beaten it, but I had also.
Did you win
also,
it?
Yeah, I won it.
That's all I care about.
But they
the high score.
The reason that was played instead of like the base game or whatever is because in Lost and Damned they introduced multiplayer co-op mode where you can play with up to four people, something like that, and the game just gives you random missions that you can just do, you know, and in basically an infinite stream, and so it's like you and your friends spawn in, and it's Lost and Damned, so you're like biker
dudes or
whatever.
Oh yeah, didn't we play some of this?
I think
yeah, we did,
might
actually,
have a little
yeah.
bit, yeah. And they give you just random objectives, like there are armored cars driving around,
right,
go rob
yeah.
them,
yeah,
or whatever. And the reason I mention it is because, yes, it's fun, and it's cool, people should play it.
That's
it's
good.
It's really nice to have like
<Good reason. laughs>
objectives in co-op, because, you know, in GTA 4 base game, it's like, get in and fuck around and do nothing or competitive, you know. But there was an interesting sort of like emergent strategy that became clear just when me and one other person were playing, because basically some of the objectives you get are static and you can put like your little objective marker on it and it draws a line to it that's like the best way to get there, but some of them are like guys that are driving around the city and you can't, like, the objective marker can't move, so if you put it somewhere the guy keeps driving and now your
right.
little line isn't fucking accurate anymore, and so it's hard to track those guys. But the strategy that kind of arose is like, you get in a car or on a bike and your friend gets in with you, so they're just sitting in the car with you, and they open up the map, you know, on the pause screen and just stay in that mode and constantly update the objective to be tracking the guy while the other person drives.
So you had a navigator.
Yeah, it was like one of those sort of, you know, RTS / you know, 3D action games where like somebody, you know, like a Battlefield 2 and stuff like that, where like
right.
one guy is the commander and they basically spend the whole game in the tactical map and then everybody else is playing.
So you
in real
unlocked
time, you know?
You unlocked GTA 4's secret mission commander class.
Yeah, it was really interesting because it was like one person is looking at this high level
awesome,
abstraction
yeah.
of the gameplay, and you're both vocally with, you know, the voice chat stuff and by updating the objective marker, you're guiding the driver to the spot, and then when you see you're getting near your objective, you back out of the map screen so that you can, like,
so
you know, shoot the guy or
right,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really interesting and it was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you drive the car or use the map?
We traded off. It was fun both ways.
Good.
It was cool. So I did that.
Sweet.
Sweet.
Video
good.
Games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Games.
Yeah. I've been doing more of making them this last couple weeks than playing them, unfortunately.
Anything exciting on that front?
No.
Yeah, same.
I touched an editor.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. I input some
I was using some video game creation tools.
Objects, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not good to talk about on a podcast, though.
It could be, but not right now.
No. What about you, Chris? God, want to tell us about StarCraft 2?
I could talk for like 1 minute about StarCraft 2.
I hear you. You went further up the ladder.
Well, depends how you look at it. Nick and I have moved up to a higher ladder, the gold ladder, but we are hovering around the bottom of this ladder now.
Were you, Nick, pleased by the fact that you are on gold ladder?
Well, I don't think we actually ever looked at it in the way that you probably mean.
Jeff game gold ladder.
Yeah.
Ladder fold.
Yeah, it never actually occurred to us.
All right, well, now it has, so yeah. You better play that the fuck up.
Yeah, what happened was Blizzard reset the entire BattleNet structure a week ago to test what it was like.
The BattleNet gold ladder?
Yeah, all the ladders. And so when we did our placement matches, we placed into gold this time.
Nice.
And so we're like, oh man, we're on gold. Great, because we were on silver before.
Yeah.
And so the problem is...
Great gold?
It was a great gold. Great gold.
Gold game ladder. I'm done now. What?
Thanks, Jake.
We have this wizard puffin on the table.
It's just egging you on. Yeah. It's like memes, say them.
It's a wizard. It's casting that.
Yeah, it's casting.
It's casting meme.
A pod.
It's, yes.
Meme bath.
Yeah.
Meme pod.
Cone of meme.
That's true.
So yeah, we placed into the gold league and we were kind of excited about that at first until we played several days in a row where we just got our asses beat. And every time we would move up a little bit, we would immediately lose like two games in a row and go back down again. And it's been fucking hard. But we actually, in the last 2 days, have won most of the games we played. And we're now starting the slow trek up the gold ladder. So we're in like, you know, place 80-something now out of 100.
Yeah.
So we're slowly moving up. But we were holding up the rear for a while. So
I was reading an interesting thing about this.
Yep.
About gold ladder?
Shut up.
Whoa! Whoa!
Sorry.
Scoops.
Silence. What was the interesting thing that
have you ever seen there's a blog called I think psychologyofgames.com.
I don't think so, no.
It's written by I think a guy named Jamie Madigan.
Oh yeah, I know Jamie Madigan, yeah.
Okay, so
not personally, but
yeah, but I mean I think he, you know, has a degree in psychology or is a psychology grad student or something and writes about how psychology relates to video game stuff. And one of the things that he wrote recently was about how essentially I forget what the phenomenon was called, but that there is an actual known phenomenon that is like what we've talked about with StarCraft 2 or like Street Fighter or something, where the more games in a row you win, the less likely you are to win the next one because it has a direct effect on
how
you play.
Yeah.
Where it basically...
You get more confidence and kind of that kind of thing.
I think it's actually more along the lines of you start to like be more... kind of stressed out about it, you know, like
stakes get higher, you're pressing your luck basically by
And it's that whole idea of you know, flow and being in the zone, right? And kind of like doing well because you're not thinking
please
about
pronounce
it.
The name of the man who proposed flow theory.
I don't even know the name.
Oh,
of the
okay.
man. I forget.
It's like,
I'm sorry.
It's like 85 letters and most of them are consonants.
Right. He's like Polish or something. Yeah. Right?
I just wanted to see if you
sorry. Know. I don't even remember his name.
I couldn't
pronounce it. Yeah, where it's basically like you just start paying attention to stuff you don't need to be paying attention to because you're just so focused on wanting to win, you know, whereas the more relaxed you are, the more likely you are to win. And that's the state you're in when the stakes are lower. So anyway, yeah.
Well, there's definitely something, I mean, and that definitely applies in different ways. So that's the main reason I play 2v2 with Nick is because so when Nick was like our schedules don't always overlap, like, you know, and as a PAX, we just fell in the ladder because
you
I wasn't there
all
to play.
You spent all of PAX lamenting that you weren't playing StarCraft.
I may have lamented it a few times. But then when I got
wish
back...
I could be playing StarCraft 2 instead of this social special event.
Fuck you.
Why do we have to keep playing Marble Madness? Why are you still talking, Chris?
Anyway, so...
I'm not a PAX anymore, either.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why I'm saying those things, but Marvel Madness is weird. Actually, the reason I was bummed at PAX is because literally, like, an hour after I left for the airport, Blizzard reset the ladder. So that was when all the placement games were starting and people were getting places. So I left right at the time when it was, like, the one time when the ladder actually starts fresh and everything. But anyway, so whatever. I then after getting back from PAX, a couple days later, Nick was doing something or other, and so he wasn't able to play that evening. And I played some single player games for the first time in like a month probably, and that was 100% what you're describing. Like, I won my first two games, and then after winning two games in a row, I was like, literally my heart was fucking pounding. Like, I was so more stressed out than I can remember being in my life at any time in recent memory.
Yeah.
And I lost my next game, and it was like the biggest relief. And then after that, I went on to win my next game after that. And then what's funny is, so how it works is, you play five placement matches and then you're placed in the ladder. And after completing my fourth placement game, I did not have the nerve to play the fifth one and be placed. And so I haven't played single player since then, or not single player, but 1v1.
Yeah.
And but what that is, the stress of competitive StarCraft is mitigated by about 1,000% by playing with
a partner. Yeah,
like, it's just because you have someone.
Because you're not solely responsible.
Exactly.
For
if you
win,
fuck up, they can help you out, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And you start developing a rapport, and it's less insane.
It's just an interesting psychological phenomenon where like the actual core issue, as far as I've read about it, is not is the result of you being stressed out, which is just that you try to use your conscious mind to overcome the problem more than normal, you know. And so when you're stressed out, you're just like focusing a lot. But I mean, it extends to, I've read other stuff about, like, for instance, accuracy, like people in like shooting contests archery contests or whatever. They did sort of studies where it's like one person intentionally tries to, you know, concentrate very much on exactly where their shot is going to land, uh-huh, versus someone else just sort of does it by muscle memory. And the harder someone's trying to concentrate on being accurate, the less accurate they are.
That's totally true. Yeah.
And it's just sort of what kind of stressors put you in that state. It can be anything, you know. And in this case, it's just, oh man, I don't want to fuck it up because we're about to place.
No, it's true. And there are definitely direct analogs to what you're describing with things like aim. I mean, stuff like practicing your build orders and, you know, just having familiarity with the units. I mean, the more you're thinking about, when, you know, StarCraft is all about counters, basically. Like, StarCraft is a game about countering what your opponent's doing in a very direct way. So when he's building this type of unit, it's important that you counter with another kind of unit. And so as a result of that, it's very much about intelligence and scouting. And the less you have to consciously weigh in your mind this unit versus that unit, the better you'll do. Like, the more instinct driven that is, like, the less you will start actually consciously devoting, you know, brain cycles to
fucking
thinking
yourself.
Oh my god, that guy's building stalkers, what do I need to build to counter that?
Yeah.
Like, once you have played a number of games and you internalize that and you stop being so straightforward and thinking about it, it the game becomes a lot less stressful. But it's easy to fall back onto your haunches and start like digging in and thinking too hard, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how it seems that as a principle, kind of like having split attention is actually superior, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever form that takes, you know, like if you're listening to music and you're concentrating half on the music and half on what's going on, you know, or whatever, you know?
That reminds me of something I read about StarCraft strategy years ago when I was playing StarCraft 1, and I was reading about, you know, people like really high level, this was written by a really high level player, and he was saying, if you're going to listen to music, listen to the StarCraft music, because it's that music is written in such a way that it's, that there's like a melody to it and you can sort of follow it, but it's very like easily absorbed into your brain. Like, it's a very specific mix of like ambient and melodic. And it's like the right balance of not being too distracting, but also kind of having a grounding there for you.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sure that was deliberate on Blizzard's part, but the guy was like, basically, like, if you don't have music that suits that exact goal, just listen to the StarCraft music because that's what it's for and it works. And that was interesting to me that somebody had like actually assigned that to in-game performance.
Well, I mean, it's similar to just like listening to like classical music.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So StarCraft is fun. It's a fun game.
Or like a musical.
It's not really like a musical.
Oh, it's like listening to a musical.
Oh, yeah, right. That's probably the best thing to do when you're doing anything that requires concentration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I know a game you've been playing, Jake. Yeah. I played a fucking video game, Jake. I saw it on your Xbox.
Yeah, but it's your game.
Yeah.
Well, so you played on PC and Xbox now?
Well, I guess no. I saw it on your
You saw me playing on a live system, a live enabled.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
But I saw it on my Xbox. You were playing it on your computer system.
That's the magic of Game from Windows Live.
I actually saw it on Xbox.com, and that's how I sent you a text message.
Worst. You were just browsing Xbox.com and saw that I was playing a game?
Yeah. And so I sent you a message through Xbox.com to your Windows Live account, apparently.
You've pleased Allard.
Yeah, exactly.
The
this
eyes
is
of
like
Allard.
A Microsoft executive.
The eyes of Allard are sort of crinkled with a smile.
Xbox.com is pretty good.
It is. It is good.
It's better for stuff like managing your friends list than actual Xbox.
And sending a message, yeah.
Games for Windows Live is shit for that, because if you're not in the game, you can't send one. It's only got a storefront.
Well, you can from Xbox.com, hilariously. Yeah. You can go to the Xbox website and send a Games for Windows Live message. Games for Windows Live might be stupid.
Yeah, it's garbage. Your game uses it. Yeah.
I just wanted to know what you thought about the game, if you had any thoughts.
I'm not any further along than I was. I finished Popper's Drop, my train crashed.
Yeah, but I mean, that's further along than you were last time we were talking on a podcast.
So like three weeks ago, Jake has achieved 20 minutes of game time.
Oh, that's right.
It's like the same level as he was.
Oh yeah, because you had picked up Jackie Rodkins when we had
the...
Oh, that's right.
By the way.
I forgot.
Fuck off.
You went in a weird hallway, that's all I know.
I love that hallway.
Which hallway?
The hallway in Popper's Drop that's dark and there's a flashlight. It made me really happy. Yeah. I like that it turned into the Twilight Zone for 3 seconds.
Spoilers!
Meow!
And I didn't kill the lady.
That's fine. If you don't want to.
Do you guys
have
stats on that? Do you track that somehow?
I mean, there's a secret achievement for if you don't kill anyone. So...
If you don't kill any...
I got that achievement.
Any of the story characters or the Little Sisters.
Okay.
Spoilers, that's a secret achievement in Bioshock 2 that you could have looked up on GameFAQs if you wanted. But, yeah, so I guess we know how
we
many...
We looked it up for you on GameFAQs.com.
Yeah, but that one requires you to complete the game,
pretty much.
I'm just sort of...
We don't... I don't think
Jake's a long way away from that.
No, but yeah. I mean, I just... It's...
We aren't using any of the software that tracks things deeper than achievements.
Okay.
Like, there is stuff... like that they have for like Halo and stuff. I mean, not just Halo, but a number
Valve
cutting edge games
stuff.
Yeah, are using, what is it, XLSP or something like that, where they can do
metrics monitoring.
Yeah, where they can track way more stuff than achievements, and they can do like silent, just like data update, like balance patch stuff without having to issue a title update and stuff like that. I think that stuff's going to be more common in the future,
for sure, yeah.
But that is not part of our infrastructure. So no, we don't know how many people
I'm always curious about that stuff now that I know that game companies track that sort of information.
Yeah, I killed the lady because she was in my level. I was like, get out of my level, I'll shoot you.
And then you did.
Because I can.
Yeah.
But I got...
The
I
game
got
lets you.
Leveled up security bots followed me around for a little while.
That's true, which is pretty sweet.
They were my buds,
I must say.
Anyway, that game was played for about a half hour. And then some guy blew up my train, which was garbage.
Yeah.
I stopped playing
this
after
is just
that.
Apparently every comment here is just a spoiler. We're not talking about the game. So, did you kill the lady? My train blew up. I went through a hallway. It was like the Twilight Zone. What? What? This is horrible.
Sorry. We don't need to have any of this in the episode.
Video games.
Well,
I don't
you
know.
Were addressed.
Yeah, that's you.
Oh, hello. It's me, video games. Hey, that's me turning on.
Hi, everybody.
That was made of tape.
Hello.
Well, what? That's me. Hey.
I think so.
It's me, games.
Is that what you sound like?
Yeah.
All right. It's pretty accurate to yourself.
That's true.
Reader mail.
Well, I played another game.
Fuck.
Sorry, I know you hate games and people playing.
God damn it!
Well, I hate video games.
That's that guy.
Oh shit.
Well, I hate Steve Gaynor.
Mm.
Oh man.
Well, I love you.
Oh, it's a weird podcast.
You're a weird guy, and it's this true. Podcast is your fucking fault.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
You created this.
Yeah.
You bought these microphones.
What, we're in your goddamn apartment. You have no one but yourself to blame for this travesty.
Jake's idea too.
I don't think it was.
It was. It was equally Jake and my
idea.
No,
Jake just went along with it because he wanted you to be happy, Chris.
Jesus.
I'm sorry that we have... This is an intervention.
Yeah, this... Jesus Christ.
Our readers are here to say that you have a problem, and they're not going to let you keep going on.
I do too many podcasts? I think our readers would disagree with that.
Your problem is podcasts.
Okay, just in general.
You're addicted to casts.
I am.
I don't know.
Your cast lust.
I guess that's true. I guess I have cast lust. Sweet.
If you want to participate in this intervention, write into questions on idlethumbs.net.
Tell Chris what his fucking problem is.
Tell this Chris. Inbox is going to be horrible for a week.
More songs. We need to put more songs in the podcast.
Don't give them ideas.
So you played a fucking game.
I did.
So, Chris, you played a video game.
So what game did you play, Chris?
I started playing Neptune's Pride, which is a browser-based space strategy game.
It just sounds like a Bioshock level.
It is by a guy who made Bioshock.
Oh.
And some other dudes, I think, who also worked on Bioshock.
Neptune's Bounty was a Bioshock.
That's true.
Yeah. It's by, what is it, Iron Helmet Games?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think, yeah. Something Helmet. I think Iron Helmet.
Game Helmet?
Game. Video Game Helmet.
Games.
games. Studio. So some guys formerly of Irrational, I think Irrational Australia specifically, have made a company that is focused on kind of old school space strategy games, or old school strategy games, and the first one is Space. And
it sounds like your kind of game.
So yes, for sure. It's really interesting. It's a browser-based real-time game, but it's the in time space. Scale is incredibly long. So once, even though it's real-time, one cycle of the game takes about 24 hours. And so everything, you can kind of sign in and give orders at any time, and the game just keeps chugging along.
So it's persistent
slowly.
Even when you're not
exactly,
opening
yeah.
it.
And so a game takes, you know, multiple days or weeks or months even to play, depending on, you know, the settings you choose and the speed of the game you set and everything.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a 4X game, like, you know, Masters of Orion or Star Control or something.
It seems like
but
it's definitely
in,
influenced by
But in
by
a long-term,
those.
Slow real-time, yeah. And it's really interesting. I've only played, you know, I started playing a game with some dudes from the internet. And
nice.
Yep, the internet. And actually, Nick is in the game, too. Nick is one of the dudes in the game.
Ah.
And
by the way, I wanted to say congratulations to Nick.
Oh, yeah? Was there anything else you wanted to say? Oh.
Please carry on.
So I started playing it about 12 hours ago. And so
it's going on right now.
It is going on right now. Things started happening. I finished researching my first technology about... two or three hours ago, so my ships are faster now.
Nice. Now they're only going to take 18 hours to get to another
yeah.
star.
I think my first ship is probably arriving at the star around now.
Have you acquired Neptune's bounty?
I have not yet secured his bounty.
But that's not in this game.
Oh,
I mean his kingdom. No, that's the mini golf at Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk.
I'm already imbued with Neptune's pride.
I
want to
go there.
You want to go to Neptune's kingdom?
Yeah. Do some mini golf down to Santa Cruz Boardwalk.
Yeah, they got laser tag.
I never even done laser tag there. They have a nice arcade.
Yeah, their laser tag is shit, though.
Is it?
Yeah, it's all right.
I'm not that surprised.
Neptune's Pride, however, is what you're talking about.
So are you proud of it, Chris?
I contain Neptune's Pride. Yes. It's interesting though. I don't entirely know what any of my decisions mean yet. Because
that's how it is in space.
That is how it is in space.
That's the rules of space. No one knows.
No one knows anything. But I'm curious to see how it'll play out. Next time we do a podcast, a lot of things will have happened, and I can say what they are.
The next time we do a podcast, three things will have happened.
Yeah. But it seems like one of those games where it will reach a point where everyone starts actually interacting with each other, and people are getting in battles over star systems, and your technologies are upgrading. Like the thing is, right when it starts, everything you're doing, every single action in the game is starting from square one at the same time. But obviously, different things take different amounts of time to do. So the longer the game goes on, the more things are starting and stopping at overlapping points instead of all at the same time. So I don't know how really that plays out yet, but I'm curious to see.
What is the graphical presentation of this game?
It's a kind of 2D like map view.
Like
so,
a map.
Like it's flash based.
It's like a star.
Some sort of vector
star chart.
Lines.
Yeah, it's all vector stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
It's nice and simple and what you need it to be basically.
What you need when you need it.
What you want when you need what? Yes.
Reader mail.
Sure.
Wait, I actually no, I didn't.
What do you guys think about Facebook games?
I have never played one. No, I played Scrabble for a while.
Yeah.
I played that zombie Facebook game.
What's that called? Or what is it about?
Zombies.
Zombies. Mm.
That was the...
It's not Zombie Wars or Zombie Town or Zombieville.
No, it was no, the one that everyone played that made them move games and apps onto a second page.
Oh, was that the one that made me stop using Facebook entirely because my entire feed was...
You've been bitten by a zombie.
Here's a zombie. Have a zombie. I bought you a gift in zombie game. Zombie bite.
Yeah, but...
Zombie goodbye?
Was bite.
Oh, okay.
Zombie goodbye. Zombie good bite.
Zombie goodbye.
Zombie goodbye was the single, the hit single that was attached to this game.
I just have this weird feeling, like, it makes me, like, I almost feel like the games that are the ones I like the most are kind of becoming an endangered species, where, like, single-player immersive games are the main thing that I'm into, but they cost so much, and they have so little inherent connectivity and kind of, like, saleability on those same lines. It's like, even the kinds of games I normally like to play, a lot of them are now like inherently co-op based to the point where it's hard to actually fully enjoy them if you don't have at least one other person to play them mm-hmm. with. I don't know. It's just a strange feeling that I have, because so much is like, if you're not making Facebook games, people are still like looking at Facebook integration and right. social everything. And it's like, I don't know. I tend to play games more the way that you like read a book, you know, where it's like, I want to sit down and concentrate on it and have it be a contained thing. I don't know. It's strange to see things going in that direction, because it makes me wonder if, like, it's a strange world where the kinds of games that have kind of defined the cutting edge and the most whatever, you know, high profile gaming experiences for the last 10, 15, 20 years could almost become dinosaurs the way that flight sims, you know, that were really big and expensive have, or
yeah,
you
no, know, I was just gonna say, like if you feel like the games you like are endangered, then any game that isn't the most successful within the console arena, those people, including me, have been, like, I've been feeling endangered for a long time. Like any remotely complicated strategy game or tactics driven thing, or like anything basically that isn't a game where you're a guy who runs around on the kind of high end PC and console space, those things have been endangered for a long time. But I know what you're saying.
GDC especially freaked out a lot of people because of that.
Because of all the Facebook people were out in full force. This was the first GDC year where those people were out in full force with already a proven year of success. Whereas last year, a lot of people were talking about that stuff.
Right. Facebook
this is
apps
the year where
like
Facebook has 90 million users.
Yeah.
Or 85 or whatever. I mean, fucking a lot of millions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no,
it's
strange to me, because it feels like things that are like intentionally single player, period. Just like no co-op, no competitive, no Twitter or Facebook integration or anything.
Your Twitter friends how far you are in Uncharted 2.
Meow. Are like headed towards being a pretty specific niche, you know, where it's just like no connectivity. This is a thing you do by yourself, and you feel like you're in a world, you know, experiencing it firsthand.
I would personally
it's
not.
Interesting.
Yeah, I agree, and that is the kind of game I play the most overall. And
it's not like those things aren't still profitable.
No,
I mean,
exactly,
you look at games like, for instance, you know, Mass Effect 2 did really well, and critically, and I assume in sales, and
that's why you don't have much to worry about, because those are still. Like the people who already enjoy those games aren't going to stop existing. That's my point. There might be lots of other people who don't enjoy those games who do enjoy Facebook games, but someone who enjoys playing Mass Effect 2 is probably like you. I don't think they're suddenly going to disappear. Like,
well,
I think they do kind of slowly disappear.
I think it's kind of similar to like the Japanese game market, you know, where it's sort of like they for the most part has concentrated on like their core of like Japanese fans, and that fan base has just deteriorated over time without being replaced, you know.
I think that's more like particular design approaches as opposed to the general notion of kind of an in-depth single player experience. Like I don't think that the market for that has shrunk that much. It's just transferred to be more heavily Western rather than Japanese.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that market has a chance of going away over like if you want to measure this in like, you know, the single player high budget games have been the thing that games are, like you said, for about 20 years. But if you look 20 years into the future, probably there's a good chance that won't be the case at all.
Okay, so do you think that like dramatic television is going to go away in the face of reality TV, since you can get 30 million people watching Dancing with the Stars, which is more than you can get for pretty much any dramatic program, which costs a lot more to make? I mean, do you think this? I mean,
no, but I think games are in flux more, and I think people's interest in them is still a weird sort of transient thing. You'll end up getting a generation of people who grew up on like a DS and Facebook, more so than us who grew up on a Nintendo and a PC. And well, I don't know why
those people growing up take like, you know what I mean? Like, if we've already had generations of people growing up on this, like, doesn't that imply that the people growing up on Facebook or whatever, like, that's equally
the generational fall off, I think, is a real thing where it's like the people from prior generations bit by bit tend not to play as much stuff, you know, and like the younger generation is going to be the ones making up the core of we spend X number of dollars per week on this thing, and it's going to be higher than the guys who are now like 40 or 50 and Half-Life 1 is part of their upbringing or whatever, you
that
know?
Could be, although the biggest audience for social games, at least in the United States, is people who are on the older side. People in their teens do not play a lot of social games. There might be like a really specific teenage girl demographic of a certain type that plays a lot of that stuff, but the great majority of it is older females, usually in their 40s and 50s.
I don't think that it's a huge threat. I don't think single player games are actually going to shift a whole lot.
There's
going to be some degree of change, obviously. This is evidenced from what happened at GDC.
And I mean, even like if you look at social gaming and Facebook stuff and whatever as one poll, like, I mean, even pulling closer in, just like co-op being almost an expectation, and that being of like a big, you know, expensive game, and that being kind of a slippery slope towards like, well, now the single player experience is diminished because we expect you to be playing this co-op. I mean, I've played a number of, co-op based games where it's like, I don't have any of my friends online right now and I paid money for this and I want to play it and kind of feel immersed in it. And this isn't fun unless you have another person.
Even among the hardcore gamer community, there is sort of a meme of like co-op automatically makes anything better.
Yeah. Which is, on some level is true,
also can ruin a game that otherwise would have been best served,
at least for the single player component, you know. So I don't know. It just seems like it could go towards being a niche, you know. And
I will say though that I would not be entirely averse to that. Like,
no,
outside
I don't either,
of,
but
outside
it's like
of
some
video
of this
games,
stuff is like sorry, I just think of some inherent like aspects of these kinds of games require maybe not, but a certain level of, you know, like just money and team size to actually carry off something like this. I mean, I guess if you could...
This is being said by the author of Game Noir, the classic blog post. You're selling yourself out here, Steve.
If you could maintain fidelity and scale overall scope, then I guess, you know, you could do the same thing with less money and a smaller team.
I mean, I think that'll start to become more true when you look... I mean, I don't know. The stuff that smaller teams are doing now is kind of mind-blowing, but... even as kind of mainstream game industry teams balloon constantly. But I wouldn't be all that broken up if that type of game that I enjoy became a bit more of a niche target. I mean, when I look outside of video games, most of the stuff that I enjoy, be it movies or books or whatever, television, like most of the stuff that I enjoy is the stuff that isn't the big like centerpiece marquee titles. Most of it's the stuff that has some like decent awareness behind it, but isn't like the absolute blockbuster akin to like a Modern Warfare 2 launch. The equivalent of that in the movie world is usually not what I care about.
Yeah, I mean, we both like Mad Men or whatever, you know, like the kind of stuff that is good but is not the biggest.
Right.
The thing that's always going to be tough in games, though, is if you want a world, that's the most expensive thing you can make in a game is a big explorable world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing that you get for free. Or at least for cheap, or you can imply a lot more easily in a TV show because you don't have to show the parts that...
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, it's true. And I think that something like GTA will probably always continue to be that huge marquee thing because that is a game that is more relatable, I think, than a lot of video games. And that might be what's necessary if you're going to make a huge big budget thing as opposed to some weird, wacky sci-fi shenanigan. You know, like, or not. I don't know. I mean, I guess sci-fi movies are getting bigger all the time these days. But, you know, I would be happy if games of that scale were sort of big, expensive exceptions and there were a lot of games with more controlled scope that weren't always expected to outdo each other every year with insanity.
Because I mean, on some level, it seems like having no network connectivity is potentially part of scoping, where it's like, okay, we're a small team. We're going to make something that's very focused on the single player experience of the world. We're going to save on our feature set and everything by not having to have network programmers or debug any of that stuff.
I think that's the sort of thing that we're going to end up seeing. I mean, I'm always dumb optimist guy about this sort of thing, where I expect change to eventually come back around, where I feel like as more and more people are playing games on just sort of more like embedded or embedded systems or
just cross-platform stuff in general.
It seems like when the potential fidelity for a lot of those systems comes back up, those are all very solitary devices. Things like, portable computers and things that everyone loves talking about this week, like the fucking iPad.
Your favorite device.
I'm so excited for that stupid thing, but whatever things are the shift in hardware that seems to be going on right now in terms of personal stuff is connected to the internet in social in that way, but there seems to be less and less of a focus on people packing in front of a television.
Hopefully, it's more like you hold the device that you are personally using.
And I think if those things evolve into a way that you can actually have some fidelity of control and nice art, you might end up with an audience sort of looped back around that is looking for solitary interactive experiences. That's a crazy I'm that guy on the podcast who said that stupid shit. Sorry.
Yeah, but it's also connected this is not the same point really, but it's related to it. The notion that theoretically sometime we might have game formats that are not entirely proprietary, at least not in the sense that they are now, where every other possible form of mass media entertainment that exists today can be converted or viewed on any type of device
That's the reason people want an iPad, is that it's another way that you can listen to all of the music that you have and read your books.
Right. But games are the one thing where that's just completely impossible. Everything has to be discreetly developed for a particular platform. OnLive is an example of how you breach that barrier.
Man, did those guys shoot themselves in the foot with that pricing. God.
What was the pricing?
You pay for a subscription and then you buy games off the marketplace on top of that.
Wow, how much are those things?
I think the subscription was, I think it was 15 a month, and then I think games were $5 to $10.
Jesus.
That's not a lot, except that you're not buying anything.
Except that you don't own anything.
Well, I mean, you're buying a license to play it, right?
But sort of. I mean...
Yeah. The model that they used to get everyone excited about it was, it's like Netflix streaming, but for games. Mm, but instead, it's like, well, it's actually like the iPhone apps. It's like the iPhone App Store, but it's all in the cloud. You don't even get a file that you can tote around with you. Yeah. It's weird.
Hmm.
Games.
But yeah, it seems like the two potential outcomes are either what I would think of as more positive, where it's like people get a smaller, more diverse, market of smaller, you know, less just sort of like mass appeal single player games that are these more contained projects, or there are no single player games except the most gigantic blockbusters that can get funded know that they can make $100 million off of them.
Right? No, it's true. And I think that, you know, that is to an extent how Hollywood works if you're interested in a certain kind of movie, you know. But the thing that's nice about the thing that's hypothetically something that might be appealing to me is that once you get rid of I don't know, I guess the way I see it is sort of if you take the spotlight off of that segment of games, there might be more freedom not to have to live up to ridiculous expectations.
Yeah, where it's just like we are not we're not even in the running to be like the premier form of video game anymore. Right. So we're going to speak directly to the people who are still interested in this secondary form in ways that just have fewer, you know, less oversight, fewer dependencies, etc.
Yep. The tough thing, obviously, as we've already said, is that video games are so much more technology dependent than most
forms of entertainment. It's weird to think about that just nothing is free in a game.
Yeah.
Like with a book, people can read
anything they
people
want.
People can read your words. With a camera, you can take a picture of something and it's there.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yep. Games are
unless
difficult.
We move back to FMV and text adventures, then.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know what was funny? I was at this weekend was WonderCon here in San Francisco, which is just some lame nerd convention. I mean, like,
whoa!
I don't know. I thought it was kind of lame, but that's just me.
But you shared a bathroom with Nicolas Cage.
So
you watched Nicolas Cage pee.
Well, okay, so
that's what I heard.
What, Jake, you're outraged after that, after you said I shared a bathroom with him? And now you're outraged.
Oh, I meant like you washed hands next to him. Oh, no, that's next not to happened. His penis.
So I was in a hotel room in this was like
good.
While one
this cat is getting better.
No,
by the
this
second.
Is not a good story. That's the problem. It's a goofy, weird, short story that does not have an amazing punchline. So I was
where's that timpani guy?
Oh man, he died. We already determined that.
Oh, yeah, he did.
he did.
I was getting ready to interview Jerry Bruckheimer, and I was in a hotel room.
What is wrong with you?
And,
what?
And I was hanging
out. Why are you interviewing
Jerry
Bruckheimer?
Just lame, stupid thing. Anyway, I was in this room.
This was like hilarious. Taking place at the same time WonderCon was, but it was in a hotel, whereas WonderCon is in a convention
center.
So
you were sharing a hotel room with Jerry Bruckheimer.
Jerry Bruckheimer wasn't there at the time.
Nicolas Cage and Jordan Mechner?
None of those people were simultaneously in the room at the same time ever.
Oh, were you talking to Jerry Bruckheimer because he's producing the Prince of Persia movie? Okay.
Yes. No, because he's a listener. He's an Idle Thumbs reader.
Hey, Jerry.
And so when I was in this room waiting, Nicolas Cage just like opened the door, walked in the room, and just like with a dour expression on his face, walked into the bathroom and he never came out. Like I was in there for like another 20 or 30 minutes and that, like he was just there. So that guy had some stuff to take care of. Also, it looks like he is trying to bleach his hair to be the color of his skin because he's got it's weird. He's a weird looking dude at the moment. He's got long bleached weird hair, and he's Nicolas Cage, and he looks weird.
Does he look like Lynch from Kane and Lynch?
Sort of, except he doesn't have the big bald spot.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you read about that? Kane and Lynch, they're making a movie of it.
Yeah, and like Jamie Foxx is playing one of them.
Jamie Foxx is playing Lynch. Jamie Foxx
so
as
weird.
Pudgy, bald, mulleted
white man.
Psychopath.
Is he
going
to be white or is he going to be black?
No, it's just going to be him. And
so they're changing the character.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Bruce Willis is playing Kane.
Okay.
So it's Bruce Willis and Jamie Foxx. Sort of being Kane and Lynch. I mean, Bruce Willis is
a
way better
comedy buddy action.
I don't know. I mean, that game was pretty fucking grim. That's what I liked about it.
Dark, grim game.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I loved about that game was how like the entire thing was about Kane trying to fix stuff, and every mission was about how he just fucks it up worse by doing that. And so if the movie's about that, maybe it's interesting. Yeah. But maybe Jamie Foxx instead of Lynch is odd.
That is a weird, weird choice.
Hey, there you go.
Getting ready for that movie to.
I mean, I wonder if he'll
be
still
made.
Be like a pill popping, you know, like schizophrenic.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Maybe he is.
The weird thing about video game movies is there's really no accountability to anything.
Yeah.
Like, there's no. I mean.
Yeah. It could be the equivalent of the fucking Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And like, it was.
Two guys shoot guns. We are going to call it Kane and Lynch.
Da da da. Yeah.
Who knows?
Probably. I was talking, we were talking to, what's his name? Jerry Bruckheimer. And he was, hearing that guy's philosophy on, I don't know, anything just confirms why I'm not interested in movies he makes ever. Like it, I don't know. He's a super nice guy. Like he was a really nice guy to talk to, but it was really weird hearing the way he thinks about
things. Was he the guy that was responsible for the freaking Transformers movies?
That's Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
I mean, Michael Bay for the longest time was the guy who would direct.
Yeah,
like Jerry Bruckheimer produced.
He produced like Bad Boys 2, and he also produced more recently the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. But he basically movies where things blow up 1,000 times are often traditionally produced by him and directed by Michael Bay.
Why is Bad Boys 2? Why do people not talk about Bad Boys 1?
Apparently, it's not as good. That's like Terminator.
Wait,
2
really?
Is the one that
is
everyone
that the reason?
Everyone talks about Terminator 2, and no one talks about Terminator 1.
Some people talk about Terminator.
Yeah, but most people talk about the two.
Yeah,
everyone talk about Bad Boys 2? I've never heard anyone talk
Bad
about
Bad Boys 2 is cited all the fucking time.
Bad Boys 2 is cited frequently as like that movie. I think it just has way more like quotable slash hey remember
explosion?
That scene.
Yeah, that's
ridiculous
also that's
shit.
Like that's the movie with the two dudes walking away from an explosion as the poster. Like that.
Yeah,
it's that's the iconic image from.
And
that.
One of them
it's
is Will Smith,
dudes,
and the other
yeah.
one is
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was reading about this the other day because he referenced it.
But I mean, did you watch?
I like how there are surely people who listen to this podcast are like, "What the fuck is this? What are these?" I read that Will Smith was in it because I was researching Bad Boys 2.
Did you watch
I interviewed this man Jerry Bruckheimer, and he mentioned his film.
Well, no, the way he mentioned it was hilarious because I've never seen Bad Boys, Bad Boys 2, but I fucking heard of it. I know those movies exist.
Well, I mean, you
and
saw Hot Fuzz, right?
I did see Hot Fuzz.
They made like 500,000 references to it.
Well, I didn't know that, but now I do. And
they
so
put clips from
they
the
show
movie
the fucking poster in the film, and they say "Bad Boys 2 Classic." Anyway, right,
whatever. Well,
Chris, he says that it's weird.
The way that Bruckheimer, he was like, "Oh, we did this movie. It was called Bad Boys one time, and you know, it was a film that we did." And like every time he brings something up, he like he's that fucking guy where he's like, "Yeah, we did this movie, Bad Boys. It's called Bad Boys." And when we asked him about making a video game movie, he was like, "Yeah, well, you know, people think you can't make a movie out of some things, but you can do it. I mean, we made a movie out of a theme park ride." And then like 5 seconds later, it's like, "Oh, the Pirates of the Caribbean." It's like, yeah, we fucking know. I know what I've heard of Bad Boys. I know Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, you don't need thanks, douche. But no, he's a nice guy for real.
Whoa!
This is the best. I love
also,
this.
Apparently, Beverly Hills Cop took 10 years to make. He said, "So now you know
from,
that
from
fact.
Conception to yeah. shipping yeah. to completion."
Because apparently, the way that Bruckheimer's scripts are written, he explained this to me. You have to. Apparently, there are very few people in Hollywood who can write a good screenplay, and so what you end up having to do to make a good movie, according to Jerry Bruckheimer, is you have someone write a draft. And then you bring someone else in to write humor into it. And then you bring someone else in to kind of get the structure. And then you bring someone else in to write a good female character. Then you bring someone else in to get the dialogue punchy. And then and apparently you just do this one by one. It's not like a writing room or anything. Like yeah. you just bring people in a line for yeah. like years.
Yep.
Which
and only like what is it like the last three people that touch the script get their names in the credits.
I think it's you have to be able to take credit for X percent of the final
yeah.
script.
Mm. Like Jordan Mechner is still credited on. Sands of Time, even though his contribution was the original draft.
Is he screenplay or is he story by or something? Oh, so you
I
can
don't
also
know.
End up getting
yeah,
that.
Yeah. There's yeah. all, I remember reading about all those WGA rules one time, yeah. but yeah, I don't know which he is. But yeah, it was surprising. And so apparently sometimes this takes like 6 to 10 years. Like Sands of Time, I guess, has been in the works for 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah.
So weird.
Sweet.
And then we talked to Jordan Mechner, who's actually a cool dude, who's really cool and yeah. smart.
But really, he's a douche. Oh, no.
No, but he's cool, though. He's cool. Fucking douche. But he's nice. But no, seriously. I like him, though.
Great guy. Great to work with. Cock.
Fucking asshole.
So, stand up individual. Yeah. No, I mean, Jordan Mechner, I've kind of come to realize that he is, like, one of the biggest kind of game design just masters.
He's a lord.
He's a lord of game design. And I really didn't realize it until the last couple of years when I started reading more of like his writing and interviews.
Oh, yeah,
and
all
stuff.
That stuff he puts up on his site and everything.
Yeah, and other interviews like that interview that was on Gama Sutra with him and I think Michelle Ancel.
Eric Chahi,
right. Yeah. And just like getting exposed to just like, holy shit, this guy
yep.
knows exactly what's up and yeah. like is really just kind of wise and pragmatic about mm-hmm. game design in ways that, you know, I hadn't had as much of exposure to just kind of his thinking on design until, you know, more of it had started going yeah. online recently, basically. And I'm like,
really
wow.
glad that that's happening because I've been a fan of that guy for like a decade now.
Yeah.
Or more.
So I've been really impressed. There have been multiple things that I've read that he's written that I'm just like, yes, that is
yep.
the shit. And
he should make more of the games.
Yeah. And
he's working on a game right now.
Yeah.
Good.
It's stuff all the way between like, you know, like that interview that went up this year versus stuff that I read from his journals from like 1989 or something.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, yes,
yep.
this guy knows everything. Not really. But I mean, you know, he has his head in the right place as far as game design goes. Does. And it's super impressive.
And he's constantly doing other things. I mean, he wrote, you know, drafted a screenplay for a big Jerry Bruckheimer movie, but he also, you know, has directed independent documentaries and written like graphic novels. And
yeah.
like, he just does stuff all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
he's constantly doing things.
He's like a world traveler and he like sketches yeah. his travels and stuff yep. like that.
He apparently only started sketching a few years ago and he's actually really goddamn good at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's cool. And
a polymath in our midst, mayhap.
He's apparently working on I think I mentioned this to you, Jake, but he's planning on bringing back The Last Express in some form, but probably not as a game.
It should be like, a game though.
But I mean,
I just want more Last Express.
I do too, but the style and world of that
yeah,
game
no,
is also something that could really be successfully done as a lot of other things. And I
wonder how interesting it would be if it was just a XYZ story, movie, whatever, set on the last.
I also, I would not complain if Jordan Mechner yeah. came over and said, "So I'm going to do a turn of the century mystery story on the Orient Express that's super heavily like Art Nouveau." Okay, I'll take that. Fine.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's super interesting.
As long as he's also making a sweet game somewhere
yeah,
else.
Yeah, it just
time.
Doesn't seem like it.
at that point, there's not a shit ton of differentiation from like an Agatha Christie novel or something.
No, that is true. Yeah. But whatever. That guy can make that and I'll consume it.
All right.
Yep.
I'll consume his train.
Will you?
Based fiction.
Well, good talking. Yeah. You want to look at a mail?
Yeah, let's take a break and I'll get some mail queued up.
See ya.
This cast is over.
Video game. We're back.
Reader mail. It's Jake. Video games.
Silence.
So, Larry LeBron writes, "Hi, Tit P. What? Does it ever strike you as odd that a single reader mail starts with one of you guys that?"
Well, that's because you're the one reading it.
Yeah.
So you could do it. Here, let me read it. Give me that shit. All right. Yeah. Hi, Tit P.
Ugh.
Does it ever strike you as odd that a conversation about combat systems, quote unquote, occurs for nearly every new game? Why do you believe that so many games feature combat as a core mechanic? What kinds of games do you think we'd see in an industry where combat was only as prevalent as it is in books and movies today? Thanks for all the everything. Larry LeBron.
What do you think, Chris?
I think that at the root
guns.
of that is because, I think it's because one of the easiest things to do is, you know, in terms of having an effect, like implementing a system or having an effect on something in a world, is to remove it. Like, that's one of the easiest things you can do to actually impact something and have player express agency. And I mean, that's what almost every board game is based on. You know, like, it's, you know, you remove a piece or you capture something or whatever. I mean, like, taking control away or making something disappear is like a very straightforward thing to do. Like, I mean, I even remember when I would program stupid shit in BASIC, I would make a game where, you know, you're a little ship and you shoot a thing and then something disappears, because that was all I could figure out to do.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, at its core, is behind a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, games are numbers. Video games are real-time representations. Therefore, they're capable of representing characters. Numbers plus characters is hit points, do things to the thing and take the numbers away and you have an effect, you know. And in 3D space, put a box around the character, draw a line to it, see whether they intersect. You know, like, these are the most simple things that you can do interactively.
You can take screenshots of the characters in some current games, though. That's the new thing. What? You can use a camera instead of a gun.
That's true. You can.
You can draw a line at them and then take a screenshot that looks and sees if the character is inside of your
box. That's true. And sometimes you can do both at the same time, and you can see the guy who shot you in the head. Team Fortress 2.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the most basic. It's just like, it's the easiest thing
one.
You can
yeah,
do.
It is the easiest one, yeah.
It's the easiest thing that you can do to create, like, constant, you know, engagement by
the
player.
Yeah, no, I think Chris Hecker was the one who's in a recent... I mean, other people have made this observation, but he basically said, you know, in a movie, what's the easiest thing to do? It's to have a still shot of two people talking in a room. What's the hardest thing to do in a video game? Basically that. What's the easiest thing in a video game? Shoot someone and they die. You know, guns, all kinds of stuff, explosions. Like, that's the easiest thing to do to a decent level of fidelity and have it be engaging. On the film side, that's something that requires a certain budget and
way more investment, like, special effects.
Exactly,
and
all kinds of things that...
Technical people and everything else.
And so there is a weird... And then in a book, you can... Any fucking thing you possibly imagine, you can just write it down.
And that's why cutscenes are so sweet. Shoot a dude in the game, have two people talk in the cutscene. Perfect. Done.
Nice.
Ship it.
Shipped. I just shipped that real quick. It was so easy to do that I just, after you said ship it, I did it.
Thanks, Chris.
No, yeah. You can buy my handiwork in any video game on a shelf. it's a tough problem.
It is.
And I do think it's a problem.
And a lot of times when you look at games that try to have alternate sorts of interactions, they are a reskinning of core combat mechanics.
Right.
You know, where it's like a social interaction between two characters, you're actually basically wearing down their, you know, hit points as in the form of, like, you know, persuasion or yeah. something. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah.
Yep. You're murdering them with persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
You're psychologically murdering them to death.
Murder.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's I think the biggest problem is even beyond the obvious thing of just, like, all we can do is combat is basically all. The only thing that we can do very well is physicality.
Like, that's also true. Yes.
You know, like, even if it's not combat and you're like, okay, we're going to make up mechanics that aren't combat, it's going to be about digging, you know, like, it's always like,
yeah, right.
it's going to be about driving or about parachuting or yeah. about
pushing, you know, a block,
jumping yeah. around.
And, yeah. and it's like, okay, it's not
shooting. Going, oh
yeah. It's not going to be about a discourse of abstract ideas.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, all right.
Why did you give me a sassy look when you said that?
Because I love to look at you.
Oh, man.
You guys want to go to the
You
next
couldn't make a game about that.
Yeah.
No, I was, and you know, you mentioned the cutscene.
I just made
thing.
Your hit points go even, up, Jake.
It's all, you know, part of it too is that we're still.
Go up.
Persuasion.
Part of it too is even, I think, just like a technical fidelity issue where even in a cutscene, it's hard to sell human interaction a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there are very few.
You don't like the GTA mocap bro hug? Like, well, one the of hands things just like a 1,000 miles away from another guy? One, I'm acting it over and over because it's my yeah. favorite.
Anything
thing.
Picking anything up in a video game, terrible. Or arms
what about
interacting.
Holding hands in Ico. Come on.
That one's actually one of the standout ones.
Yeah.
I know.
Even
that's
like,
just,
even
that's the only example anyway.
Far Cry 2.
Which, that game's all about hands, but there's still like the wacky attachment leg where you pick up ammo off of a thing yeah. and then it goes whoop, 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 and rubber bands into your hand. It makes that sound. I don't know. It's an odd creative
choice.
That game
does a lot less hand rubber banding than most games do.
Really? That game yeah. was nothing well, for me, oh, but really? But hands going whoop and like ammo yeah. just like lagging off the shelf and then snapping
oh,
into
oh,
my
oh,
hand.
Yeah, right. In that stuff. Sense, yes,
anywhere that
yes.
they could translate the player to the exact place they needed to be to grab a doorknob or whatever, it looked perfect, but anywhere yeah. where there was just right. something was yeah, in yeah, an yeah. arbitrary location and it would just slide
yeah.
towards you along
yeah,
like,
it was wacky.
Yeah. But, you know, I thought it was a fair approximation.
Was it,
yeah.
it
didn't
Crisis
bother me
that did it like really carefully?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crisis, like the hand would go out and like clamp onto the yeah, thing yeah. and take it. I mean, also, like,
that costs so much.
The original
looks
like,
really good, though.
Yeah. yeah, and the goddamn, the original fucking Hitman game in
oh,
the year
yeah,
2000.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the one of the, like, at the time, I
the
was.
The year 2000.
Hitman.
I was super enamored of that game, and a lot of it was just because it had all of this interesting immersive technology that was almost used nowhere else at the time. I mean, it had, like, full interactive ragdolls that you could move around and stuff, almost never done at that point. It had, like, full cloth and, like, plant sim, you know, so you could, like, walk against a curtain and it would actually curve over
yeah,
Hitman
right.
and stuff. And it had, if there was a thing on the table and you went to pick it up, his hand would actually reach out dynamically and, like, IK to it and pick it up and put it in his pocket, like, each individual item. I don't know. That stuff is crazy,
yeah.
and people don't invest in that stuff now a lot of times,
yep.
you know. Strange little evolutionary dead ends.
It is still unfortunately expensive to do reliably.
Yeah.
Unless
no.
you're playing like Orb World where everything
yeah.
is an orb.
Yeah. yeah.
Even walking upstairs, which is like a basic IK function, like
yeah.
is still
it's
not
expensive
very,
to do in
I know,
a nice
I'm just,
way.
I know.
Like,
I'm just saying.
Like your
like,
foot up one stair and on the other one yeah. and then the player starts turning around and then like knees.
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
If, you know.
Yeah. No, it's
the
definitely.
Game had full real-time reflections. It had glass that broke like into individual triangles of itself that were actually pieces of the pain
that's
that had broken.
That's motherfucking Hitman 2000.
Yeah.
That's
wild,
probably what it was called. That was
wild
his code name.
Shit. It had bullet decals where you would shoot a guy, really rare at the time, maybe. I mean, you saw it in like GoldenEye, but like, whatever. I don't know. Crazy, crazy weird game to get published and turn into like a long-running
yeah,
series.
And the first game was not well-received at all. As
no,
I mean,
like, the first game was really hit and miss. It had some really yeah. amazing levels that even then, they were hard to, you know, you had to like get through the weird stuff to get to it, the good stuff, but there's so much potential there. I'm glad that it turned into Blood Money eventually.
We yeah. should go to the second reader email.
Go for it. Read it.
This is
Chris,
a really, this
Chris,
is a really
read
quick,
it.
Quick question for me.
Will you read it, please?
Duck Cubed writes, topic followed by obligatory fanfawning. The new theme song starts with a few seconds of a guitar strum ladder thing. I don't know music terminology. It leads me to think blah, blah, blah. Does that series of notes have a name? I was hoping to find more songs with that sound, and I can just really quickly answer this. That's called an arpeggio. So now you know.
Is that particular chord like a specific arpeggio?
No, it's just an E chord. It's nothing too special.
It's an E arpeggio.
Yep, it's an arpeggiated E chord. An arpeggio is when you have a chord, but you play the notes in quick succession instead of all at once. So that was that.
Arpeggiated E chord. That's the answer to your questions at idlethumbs.net.
There might be an E7 chord. I don't even remember. That's how stupid I am. Matthew Wasik writes, "Hey there, Boost Scoops and Games." Oh, weird. Okay, this is another music question. Hey, Chris, why don't your songs ever include a drum track? Is this a personal preference, a limitation of software, or something else? Are you allergic to drum machines, Snugglebum, PS?
The Ultra Boost track includes drums.
Yeah, it does. P.S. Nick isn't so bad. The answer is, I love drums, and I love playing drums, but I can't play drums in an apartment, so I don't put drums in my songs, and I don't like drum machines. The only exception is the Ultra Boost track, yeah, which is like a very electronic thing in the first place. So. Well,
but you have the crazy expensive
drum rocker
rock band thing. Can you really use that to do synth?
You drums? Can, and I was hoping to, but it's a shit drum set, so I don't. Yeah. All
right.
I just don't like synthesized drums. Like I would rather not have drums than have shit synthesized drums. Mm. So I know there's like a software you can use that has
live
good
drums
sounding samples
so fucking
and stuff,
good, though,
but yeah,
even good samples.
Yeah. And also I like actually playing the drums, and it bums me out if I have to just use some sample instead of getting to do it myself, so I just don't use them.
All right.
That's the answer to that question. Let's see what else we have.
Maybe about video games instead of about you and your music.
Roy Hampton. Wow, this guy starts almost the same way. Hey, Boost Video Games and Scoops. I have a question.
It's an arpeggio.
I have a question for you all that I will get to by means of a drawn out but relevant Far Cry 2 story. I might try to condense this.
Let me read it. I don't know why.
You want it?
I liked reading the other one.
You want to read it?
I don't know. Sure. I'll try to condense
it. It's really long. Try to condense
I'll try to condense it.
Okay.
All right. Woo.
that was the first word.
All right.
It included a pronunciation guide.
He starts with, whoo. Back catalog decided yes. Okay. I was playing an early mission when my roommate decided to watch the game over my shoulder.
This is Far Cry 2. Just reminding everyone, Far Cry 2. Far Cry 2.
Far Cry 3.
In an attempt to get my roommate to stop playing WoW, I decided to hype the game Boost Remo style by mentioning how your in-game friends save you when you're knocked down. So therefore, I let myself get killed, and sure enough, a buddy shows up and fixes me. Another jeep load of angry men shows up, and a firefight ensues. I jump into a mounted gun on my jeep and lay waste as my buddy decided to take cover down the bottom of a deep ditch next to the road. At the end of it, I'm badly hurt but alive. So my roommate asks, can you kill your friend? Unsure, I decided to creep the jeep closer to the edge of the ditch, tilting it down so I can aim the mounted gun at him. Sure enough, I can. My buddy dies after a couple hits to the head, and my roommate laughs hard as I feel guilty for my actions.
I like that sentence. My roommate laughs hard as I feel guilty for my actions.
I get out of the jeep and rush down to the dead body. Not sure why. I guess I thought I could help him back up, but I couldn't. As I look at his lifeless body, I hear the sounds of a rolling vehicle. I turn around to see my jeep hurtling towards me. It turns out, in trying to get a better shot at my now dead buddy, I left the jeep on too much of an angle. Unable to move out of the way in time, I was crushed by my own jeep. Having only one bar of health, I died from the impact. My roommate laughed hysterically and asked, "What now?" I said my buddy should come and save... Oh shit. The words game over appeared. My roommate walked off laughing, still not sold on the game. This brings me to my question. Have you guys ever tried to show a friend a game that you're really into only to have the game let you down at the exact moment you need it to be awesome?
Yes.
How have any of you ever experienced this, or is it just me? Keep up the good work. P.S. My roommate also blew up Megaton in Fallout 3. Seems to enjoy being a prick. He's nice in real life, however.
So, good job, Steve.
Yeah, that was long. I apologize. I couldn't
do
anything.
That's a good story, though.
Also, the funny thing to me is that I've heard stories like that from people before, and that's the exact stuff that makes me love Far Cry 2. So whenever people are like, and that's why this game's bullshit, I'm like, what? What are you talking about? This is that's
amazing.
You
just described the best thing. That's fucking like, you actually derived a real authentic anecdote from this thing that you could tell me. That's amazing. What were you going to say,
Jake?
Jake
has an amazing experience.
I hear a game fucking let you down.
Well, it's not amazing, but...
Oh, no, I think it's incredible.
I had a housemate when GameCube was out. We played through all of Mario Sunshine together, like, ridiculously a lot.
This is amazing.
Galaxy is a way better game than Sunshine, in my opinion. And I tried to show it to him, like, just in the last few months he came up to Sanderfell to visit. It's like, oh man, you're gonna fucking love Mario Galaxy because we played Sunshine so much. And then he really wanted to start from the beginning. And the first world of Mario Galaxy is kind of garbage compared to all the parts in the game that make it actually the most amazing thing.
So he thought you just run around on the ground.
He's like, oh, wait, you just chase this rabbit around? What is this pill? This isn't... I thought it was going to be... And it's like, okay, well, that's too bad.
Have I ever told the story on the podcast where my dad saw me playing on my Game Boy, The Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening?
I think so,
and I was
so,
in a swamp at the time,
exactly.
And he's like, oh, I see. So the object of this game is to navigate through this maze. And it was like one screen. My dad is so unfamiliar with anything. He was, you know, born before a certain year, and there was no way I could convey what this means.
I'm an epic hero.
I know, but I mean that's what it like. Oh well, this is one segment of a swap within the world of Hyrule, and I have to save and complete a quest. And it's like, what the? How am I supposed to ever explain it? Like,
I assure you, it's good and not this.
Well, because to my dad, a game is not like a story. A game is like.
The thing you're seeing on the screen right now is like Pac-Man or something.
Yeah, and you get to... Right. I don't even think he knows Pac-Man. Like, you
but
get
it is
to,
like... You, obviously,
you know,
you're on this screen of
this
game.
This is like
game.
A maze game. You know, right. It's like, go through the maze.
I like that he said, I see the point of this game is to navigate out of this maze.
Right, exactly.
No.
You might be seeing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's true that there was a maze part.
Yeah.
Was there actually a maze?
Oh, it's the swamp maze.
It was like, you know, you've got to push a rock and open. Yeah. But I don't even think he was aware of that. I think he literally thought it was like the kind of maze you do like with a pencil and a newspaper and you trace to the end of it.
Oh, okay.
Here it's an interactive version that you walk to the end. I think that's what he thought
it
was.
Right, right, right.
It's a maze master.
So this was the moment when a game let me down. I was trying to sell my dad on The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, and it just didn't work.
I've got a good dad being unimpressed with a video game story.
Yeah. Well, see, my dad was impressed with it. That was
Oh, maze.
Like, I see. You navigate through this maze.
My dad was unimpressed.
Okay. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That was the best story.
Yeah. It was not long after I started working on Bioshock 2, and my dad came to visit San Francisco. And this may partially be my fault, because we probably walked all around the city in Alcatraz and shit that day, but then that evening I was like, hey, let me play the demo of Bioshock 1 for you to demonstrate it, because here's the game I'm working on a sequel to. So I'm like, all right. So I get it on the Xbox, and my dad's sitting on the couch next to me. I start playing it, and you know, I mean, as someone who was only a fan of it at the time, like, the demo for Bioshock is fucking amazing.
Really,
like, the opening of that game
incredible.
Is just, it draws you into that world so much. And so you know, I started up, and I'm kind of doing, you know, the tour guide version where I'm looking at all the interesting stuff and kind of going through it and hearing everything and all that. And so, you know, go down in the bathysphere, get into the city. My dad hasn't said anything the whole time. He's just sitting there silently next to me watching it. And I just keep going, and I, like, you know, the whole crazy thing goes with a chick that, you know, kills a guy with the hooks, and then you come out and you see the shutters open, you're looking at the city and everything. I just keep going through, my dad's totally silent. I get the, you know, the first plasmid, you know, it goes through that whole thing where, you know, guys are walking by and the tunnel collapses and everything. My dad just doesn't say anything. And I get into the first time that you meet a splicer, you know, and you have to fight him with, like, Electrobolt, you know. And you know, I do the whole thing, and I zap him and whack him, and he dies, and it's one of the guys that internally is called Toasty. He's the guy that has, like, the bandage around his head, you know, and I kill him, and then I turn to exit through the door, and another Toasty is there, and he jumps out to attack me, and my dad goes, "That's the same guy!" And I'm
that's
just
the first thing he said.
Yes.
In this entire epic experience of, like, descending this underwater city,
and
the same NPC model is the same guy.
And I'm like, yep, yeah, it is. It's right. This is the same kind of guy. And then I play through the whole rest of the thing.
It's not actually the same guy, though, but
it's the same kind
of
guy.
Yeah. Same class of...
Well, he has the same voice and everything. Yeah. For all intents and purposes, he is the same guy. And then, yeah, I play through the whole rest of the thing. Big Daddy defending the little sister, everything. Dad doesn't say anything. I finish it. He's just like, yeah, thanks.
That is my favorite video game story ever. That's the same guy.
Yep. He noticed.
That's an incredible thing. That's like, yeah. I mean, it's a great observation for multiple reasons.
Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of
one
thing
of which
that,
is just because it's hilarious.
Yeah. And also, the other is that it just shows you the kinds of things that we are totally blind to and just accept right. as video game players. It's like, yeah, guys will probably look the same sometimes.
Yeah.
But your dad sees it. And it's just like you saw, you know, Harrison Ford twice in the same movie.
Or you saw Harrison Ford kill an identical guy twice. Like, yeah. you know, he just punched out a dude. Yeah. And then immediately
that's the same
Nazi.
Exact same
guy.
In, like, Indiana. Jones or something. Yep.
I fucking love that shit. It's so funny to me. It's
the worst.
Got any more reader mail?
Oh, I don't know, maybe.
You don't have to. It's fine. We can just end on that depressing note.
we should go out on top. This our being our last episode.
Oh, here's a story. This is something we have not addressed since
this is going to be a
the
five
previous
set.
Idle Thumbs. So basically,
plus a conference.
What the hell was this, is this the official greeting this week? Justin Richardson writes, "Hey, Boost Scoops and Video Games."
Remember how I told you that the nicknames are oversaturated and you didn't believe?
Well, no, it's because that was at the top of the Phaedrus poster. Famous
no,
was there
it's
as well.
It's because we spent the last 3 weeks just going Boost Scoops, Famous Video Games, Famous Boost Scoops, Boost and Scoops. And
I don't
boost.
Think we really did that.
Oh my god! Go listen to the episode from GDC.
I don't like to listen.
Okay.
Anyway, so this
can you
guy,
just read the fucking mail boost?
Yeah. So he says, "I came to discover your excellent website a year ago, and have listened to all the podcasts. And
good.
I thought I knew everything there was to know about Idle Thumbs, but a couple days ago, I was going through a
you found the secret site.
I was going through a thread on the official forums, and I stumbled across a link to the old Idle Thumbs website, which I didn't even know existed. There's an incredible amount of content on the site. I'm now realizing how little I know about the history of Idle Thumbs. Could you give a quick summary of how Idle Thumbs came to be? How did you guys create the site? How did Chris, Jake, Nick, and Steve meet, and how has it changed?" Thanks, Thumbs. Love the podcast, Justin R.
And P.S. How is Obligatory Babby Wizard
Call. How is Babby Form? So,
the reason I wanted to read this email is because anyone who started listening to Idle Thumbs on the Idle Thumbs podcast probably doesn't know anything about it.
AdventureGamers.net.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if we have to go back that far.
We don't have
far.
To go back
I
mean, that far, but we can.
It's not really relevant.
MixinMojo.com.
Yeah.
Basically, some of us, like Jake and me and Merrick, Bronstring, BM Bronstring.
Bronstring, Mark Bronstring.
And James Spafford, who now works for Media Molecule. And
some other dudes, Ben Andak.
Ben Andak, and like a bunch of dudes.
Guys from both sides of the pond. About half of them are from the UK, and you guys kind of knew each other through these classic adventure gaming websites that you had.
Dorky news sites
on
the interwebs.
Yeah.
I said interweb, you heard me. Fuck my life.
In like, in
don't
like
you mean
2000,
FML?
2002 or 3? 2003, I guess?
The site started in 2004.
Yeah, but we were, but I mean.
Did it? Yeah. I
guess it went live in early 2004.
Yeah, we thought of it.
Fascinating.
Here's the fact with a date. E3 2003, some of us said, we should make a website. And then we opened it a year later.
At E3 2004.
Yeah, you're right. It was E3 2004.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you guys had a website named IdleThumbs.net that instead of being about point-and-click adventure games or whatever, it was like a
all
general
video, games.
Video game
yeah, it was because
site.
We all liked
we all
adventure games when the internet started. And then, yeah,
games.
We got sick
yeah.
of them. And now I make them. but
funny how that works.
Yeah. After, it was like 2007 or 8. For various reasons, we all either got jobs or hated each other.
Well, I mean, so just to interject my own stupid ass self,
oh, Steve showed
I
up
joined
at some
in
point.
Like 2005.
Oh, yeah. One of the earliest emails I still have on my IdleThumbs.net account is from a Stephen Gaynor who was writing to us wanting to write for Idle Thumbs.
Yep.
Yeah, like that was right after we covered E3 2005, which was the year of the most content on the site, probably.
Yeah, 2005 was the golden age of Idle Thumbs.
Yeah, I basically, I found the link to it on the Double Fine homepage, because you were on the sidebar.
Yeah, Tim linked to us in the sidebar, which was the best.
Yeah, and so I clicked on that and started finding what I thought were pretty interesting...
newses?
Well, more of the articles.
More so
yeah,
articles
the articles,
probably, yeah.
Like, sort of
sorry,
the editorial stuff.
I was combining all text as newses in that sentence.
Yeah. The editorials were interesting, and I had just finished doing my 3 issues of a print zine about video games in Portland, and I kind of wanted to continue writing about games somewhere that didn't cost me money
to print
yeah. and everything else. And so, yeah, so I found you guys, and it seemed like a cool place to write editorial kind of stuff about games.
And then in 2007, it closed again. Or it closed, and then in 2008, we made a podcast.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow, was it
also
really
there
that
was,
long ago?
There was Jesus. A brief existence of the original Idle Thumb podcast by Merrick and Spaff.
Yeah, so that was the extended history of Idle Thumbs.
Yeah,
if you
there
go,
was a newspaper at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe we made it, well, yeah.
If you go to old.idlethumbs.net, you can't even.
That doesn't work. You have to go to old.idlethumbs.net.
No, that works.
Slash
you have to scroll down to the bottom and click the features link, but then it'll try to hard code it back to www, then you have to switch that back to old.
Yeah,
and then
why don't we just
work.
Change those links?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that take
I'd
about
have to
2 minutes?
Log into old.idlethumbs then.
Yeah.
No, I mean the ones on the front page. Just put old in them.
They're not on the front page right now. The current design.
No, if you scroll down to the bottom of the front
it's
page.
It's not there.
It's because nobody wants to read this shit.
All right. Well, whatever.
Wow. Anyway, so.
So that's what happened with a website one time.
Terrible. Remember when I said we're going to go out on top with that next email? We got to read one more of these. Or this is the worst.
I don't know if I have any more queued up.
Idle Thumbs is great.
.net.
IdleThumbsIsGreat.net.
Who wrote that email?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought that
guy that bought IdleThumbsIsGreat.net and put a splash
that
image on
exists.
It.
Exists.
It probably will now.
VigiVigiVigi.com.
Yeah, I know, right?
Websites.
It's still around.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah. Ultra Boost.
Video games. That's you.
I hate everything.
Oh, here's an email.
Okay, good.
Whew. K3D9S7 writes, "Dear Jake, message from Big Dog. Your discussion about me and my fellow Big Dogs inspired me to create this illustration for you. I wasn't sure whether your other phobias include insects, clowns, or heights, so I included all three of them. Enjoy. Love,
those
Big
are, in
Dog.
Fact, the things that I hate.
Really?
This is terrible.
P.S. After you go to sleep tonight, I'm going to adapt you through a ghost hole." And then... he includes these three, like, Big Dog cartoons, which I'll put up on the blog.
I'm actually fine with insects, but I'm not a big fan of arachnids. The clown Big Dog is the worst. Actually, the Big Dog with a ladder for a head is
the fear of heights. Big Dog is Big Dog with a ladder attached to it.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Also,
that clown Big Dog is the grossest thing.
You have to link to the guy's Jake Hates the Big Dog remix.
Oh, yeah. Someone made a weird audio mix. Of yeah, a big
it also
dog
includes,
discussion.
It includes Steve's laugh and making a bee sound effect, and includes me talking about how they hate the Big Dog. It's the best.
Yep. On that note, video games.
Thanks for being the best. Write a question to questions@idlethumbs.net.
Or dial 55.
Better make it
good. Y-Ramo.
Or that.
Or make it good. Oh, yeah, we should listen to those sometime.
Yeah, I know. I listened to a couple of them, but I didn't listen to all of them.
Was it just people going, wizard?
There's one guy who kept writing into us for days asking us to help him move his apartment, and then someone wrote in an email and was like, "My friend keeps calling you about moving and you're not reading it ever, so you should," or like playing it. So I guess those guys really want attention. So some dude called us asking to help move his apartment, so that happened. So I hope you're happy, guy.
Video games.
Graven Peels, don't use her real name.
His name is Graven Peels.
We got Grabbin' Peels here.
What? Grabbin' Peels the second. No, you unplugged him from his cyborg companion.
Well,
I think you mean familiar.
His cyborg familiar.
Cyborg familiar.
This episode could be called His Cyborg Familiar.
That's also the name of a, like, cyberpunk fantasy novel.
Yeah, I know. That's
it definitely
it's
is.
That.
Yep, the cyber wizard.
It would involve a cyber wizard.
Yeah.
A cyber lord, for sure.
Well, yeah.
That might be the antagonist.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh, I thought the cyber wizard would be villainous as well. You can't have cyber wizard is good?
I think the cyber wizard is sort of the mentor of the young, inexperienced protagonist who is learning the powers of cyber wizardry to defeat the cyber lord. It's a dark cyber lord.
Right, dark cyber lord, yeah.
Yeah, because there's black
the wizard is his, the cyber wizard is his counterpart. But good, you know, the balance.
He's a nice wizard.
Well, yeah. They once worked together to rule the kingdom, you know, benevolently.
They brought about great change.
And then the cyber lord grabbed for dark power.
Yeah. That's probably what happened.
And the cyber wizard is in exile.
Yeah. Okay. So the cyber lord rules the throne.
Dark cyber lord.
Throne.
Yeah.
He looks like that space marine sitting on a
sitting on his throne. The ultimate lord.
What?
You haven't seen that picture? The lord?
You know all about lords.
I know about lords, but I haven't seen this picture of a lord.
It's a space marine.
It's the
lord.
Ultimate lord.
Oh, it's a pretty sweet lord.
Let me find this lord.
I'm well aware of lords.
I don't actually know how to find it other than look at your tweets.
Do a Google image search for lord.
Space marine throne
Lord.
Marine Throne Lord. That's probably a thing.
That's probably his name.
That probably would come up in a Google search. A Google image search.
I don't think Lord is actually going to help him. Now that I think about it. Space Marine.